Hello and welcome to the episode number 7, should be, lucky number 7, with our first guest, Michael, and we will talk today about Michael's expertise, which is in, Michael?
Well, today it's artificial intelligence. There's other stuff I've moved on past. IT, I still am involved in, but AI is the current focus, yeah.
Michael, introduce yourself.
Sure. So my name is Michael Silva. I am founder and CEO of Emily AI. We have an AI system that sits in Microsoft Azure to deliver secure information real time in a very highly regulated way. I also run an IT organization. I've had that for 14 years. That's Archon One. We focus on cybersecurity compliance for law firms in New York City. And I've got 4 boys under 8 years old. I live out in New York and got other interests that don't have anything to do with AI. So we can save those for the end of the podcast. But we're here for AI. So we'll stick to that for now.
Some busy, busy home.
Yeah. And you heard her already. Svetlana, say hello.
Hello. Yeah, we were just, we actually had a false start, I want to say 2 weeks ago. So we kind of met each other and we've done these intros. But fun fact, Mike has 4 kids. I have 3 and then Edgar has 2. So yeah. We have a good diversity here of kid representations and busyness at the home. So Mike, can you tell us a little bit more? So one of the things that I think as it relates to AI, just a very highly talked about topic is building trust with AI, and I think AI compliance, you know, building trust, and they kind of go hand in hand. One of the things that I want you to kind of ask, since you work with a lot of clients in the highly regulated industry of kind of, you know, legal, not even regulated, but I would say where trust is key in delivering or kind of outputs behind these LLMs. So how do you go about kind of addressing and helping roll out or helping implement some of these LLM systems while building trust with your legal customers? And I'd love for you to dive into any use cases you could speak about as examples.
Yeah, sure. So trust is earned in general, right? That's mm-hmm. between people and machines. And I think that one of the easiest ways to ensure that you're getting a trusted answer is to start with accurate data, right? This is commonly known in the industry as RAG, but that's mm-hmm. a technical term. If you're not in the industry, you wouldn't know what that is, and that's fine. Basically, what it means is that you're asking AI to give you an answer from data that you know is true, right? Also known as garbage in, garbage out. Okay, so there's a couple of ways you can go about that, but at the end of the day, it really depends on what you're storing and also how you're asking the question. So the nature of AI systems today, and I'm not talking about like the 1980s, 1990s, because yes, AI did exist back then. I can give you guys a couple of YouTube video links if you like. The way that we know AI today is generative AI. Right, so a lot of people are focused on GPT 3.5 and GPT-4, and nobody tends to think about GPT-2 or GPT-1 or GPT-beta or anything else, right? It's just the starting point is 3.5, right? That's how everybody mentally thinks about it. And the model that everyone was exposed to in the last year and a half is a generative model, which means that it's taking a statistically probabilistic outcome from a data set and repeating back a version of that to you based on data that it knows, right? So where this can go right is if you have data that you know you trust, you can get back a relatively accurate answer. When I say relatively, because it's generating it, right? Where it can go wrong is if you are asking it to answer a question and you don't understand where the data is coming from, or if you are asking a system that does not have the capability to say no if it doesn't understand the answer, right? So an acceptable answer from a human in building trust is, I don't know, but I'll find out, right? That's mm-hmm. something that you want to hear. Yeah. Right, particularly if you have like a job interview with somebody, what you don't want to hear is the wrong answer, right? Or a fake answer or BS. Like that's like the biggest, you know, we're not going to continue this interview type answer, right? So unfortunately with machines, there's the double standard of we're very forgiving of human beings when they make mistakes. We are extremely unforgiving of machines. So the odds are already stacked against the machine to begin with. Right. So the question mm-hmm. of building trust is kind of a two-part thing, right? Just to close up on the thought, I mean, the first part is data, of course, right? That's a very important part of the strategy. But the second part of it's the human interaction with it and the expectation setting and really how you're using the tool in as much as the tool and the data behind it.
Can I just maybe layer another question on top of it? Because I know you talk about data and the importance of having a data strategy a lot on your LinkedIn posts. So, and as you mentioned, garbage in, garbage out. So how do you ensure you're putting in the right data into the system? Because if you're putting in the wrong documents and you're prompting the system, so what does AI know any different? So if you've loaded that data, does it just query everything that's possible? Is it on the humans to kind of clean up the data and to embed trustworthy data into the AI system? Or can you just throw all of the data that you have basically and then let AI figure it out? What are kind of some of the best practices?
So this is a really loaded question. So AI is not going to know the correct answer, right? It can't. What AI can do at best is give you an accurate estimation of a correct answer based on data that you have. Now, if you're looking for a degree of confidence, again, to go into the technical end of things, if you're building it, there's a system called RAGAS, R-A-G-I-S, that you can look up. That'll give you a statistical probability for how close the answer should be to being accurate. However, like talking to a person, unless you just trust that person to know what they're talking about, you cannot assume something is factually true. And assuming what something is factually true is being actually true is like a philosophical question, right? Because it really is by consensus. That's what we consider to be true, right? If you look at like the philosophical definition of truth, it's consensus. The way we use words, which is how LLMs work, to describe a concept is the same way that we use words to describe things that we see in real life that we consider to be true, right? So my shirt's white today, right? yesterday was salmon, which is one of my other favorite colors, right? But today it's white. If everybody started calling this a different color with a different set of words, we would say it's a different color, right?
Yeah.
So the question is really what is true, and it's what's commonly accepted as true. So LLMs aren't any different in that regard, right? What they're doing is they're taking data that it sees as being true, and it's returning back an answer that it thinks is true because of what it's seeing. So the question is, how do you define truth? That's really the question that you're asking. And the answer to this question is, how are you managing the data behind the scenes? There isn't an easy way today for a machine to understand what is true and what is not simply by looking at the data that's behind it. It just doesn't exist, right? Because of the reasons I mentioned before.
It's also if you have like this concept of level one and system one and system two thinking, and system one means basically intuition and intuitive thinking, and system two is basically thinking about stuff a bit longer and taking your time and retrieve the more just use more energy to get the answer basically. Like modern systems, they aren't technically capable of system two thinking, which is something that's still out there and in development, and that's why where your intuition is not always right, and so it's basically the same for large language models or generative AI for that. They have a similar problem that they only can rely on intuition if you don't give them any knowledge, and like you said, it's a lot about statistics. From what I learned, it's also you don't have to have 100%. We already had a complete episode about this for it to be useful. But of course, you have fields like your somewhere in the legal space where it's more than crucial to be precise and to not. I think there were like even lawyers using ChatGPT for their defense and quoting some random case that never went by. So that's kind of serious, right?
Yeah. Well, the funny thing that you mentioned there is that specifically to law and that use case, the attorneys have a very clear directive. They're responsible for it. Right. In the fine print, the New Jersey Supreme Court Commission on Artificial Intelligence covers this quite nicely in one of the publications they produced. On the first page, it basically says two things. The first thing it says is, if you're not using AI, you're going to get outcompeted by another law firm that is using AI. That actually says it. I have it highlighted on LinkedIn post. The second thing it says is, just like a junior paralegal that doesn't know what they're doing, you're responsible for it.
Right? Yeah, of course. Yeah.
So, in the eyes of the law, they see very little difference. right? It doesn't matter if it's poor note taking, if it's an intern, if it's ChatGPT making the mistake, it doesn't matter, mm-hmm. right? You're still responsible for it. So this is where I think there's a little, you know, overly embellished concern around AI taking people's jobs, because AI, it's not going to. I mean, some things it might come close to, right? But these are like really basic routine tasks that are just forcing evolution, right? Yeah. It's not like some threat that's going to come in and destroy humanity, you know, unless it's being misused.
Yeah, of course, of course.
Have you heard about the case? So there is a news story that came out June of last year where a lawyer was basically representing a man for an airline, you know, in some personal injury suit. And he used ChatGPT output, I think verbatim probably, from its output, and it cited fake use cases as defense to and things like that. So do you feel that is this kind of what you were talking about? It's still the problem that the lawyer is really behind whatever the output that they're putting in front of the judges. So they are responsible, not ChatGPT. Is that kind of?
Yeah, I mean that's defined by the law, right? I mean, the law is not going to hold OpenAI or ChatGPT responsible. But let's look at that exact question that you asked. So you said that ChatGPT was used to cite a case. Okay. Now going back to what I said earlier about where the data comes from, mm-hmm. where would ChatGPT be getting that data from?
I mean, it could hallucinate as well, right? So if it's citing fake use cases, you could either retrieve information that it's been trained on or hallucinate.
Okay.
If it doesn't have the answer.
I think you could even do one more. Like, it most likely hallucinates if it doesn't do any research beforehand, like a Google search or anything that extends the context of the question. So,
Svetlana, you're correct. But Svetlana, you hit on, right in the middle of your description, you hit on the real reason, right? You said what it's trained on. Okay. So again, the AI systems are drawing from data that they know about, they're trained on. Do you know what information ChatGPT 3.5, as an example, was trained on?
Of course not, because it doesn't have cited sources. It's a closed model. There's just no transparency.
We know for sure that ChatGPT originally was trained on Reddit data. Okay. So think about the average Reddit user as described on Reddit. Just go onto Reddit and look at how people describe the average Reddit user or the average Reddit mod, whatever. They make fun of each other all the time. Think about the average demographic. Okay. Now you're asking ChatGPT a question from a data set that it was trained on in large part from that data set. So does it really surprise you that the information is not accurate? Like, is it really a hallucination? Like, I would argue that you're using the wrong tool, right? And that the data is coming from the wrong place because that's originally where it came from. So about a month ago, $60 million was invested by some nameless company into Reddit, right? Recently, who didn't turn a profit for forever, by an unnamed company to get access to the data. It turned out to be Google. So why are people suddenly interested in all this public data? I mean, it's not rocket science, right? I believe most likely Google is using it to see how people interact versus the quality of the data. But even when Sam Altman came out and talked about the release of GPT 3.5, he said it's not a finished product. It's a proof of concept. It's an example. It's not really meant to be public. And everyone was blown away when they looked in the mirror of their own data and said, oh my God, it's alive. And it isn't. Right? Oh, and this is the biggest problem, is that people do not understand fundamentally how the answers are being generated. They don't understand where the data is coming from. They don't understand that things are missing. It's like that fourth unknown quadrant. If you don't know to look for a cited source, how can you justify whether or not the information is accurate based on a cited source if you don't know the source is supposed to be there to begin with? And nobody's even thinking about it. So that's another huge problem, right? So there's just so many issues with using this as the main interface to answer your questions that approach is destined to fail, right? That's why this is this fallacy. That's why these attorneys are getting in trouble, because they're starting without any degree of education. They're starting depending on accuracy, and they really do not understand how the questions are being answered. It's like, would you hire a paralegal intern off the street and do this work for you? No. but you're doing it with ChatGPT, and somehow you're expecting magic. I mean, that's where the problems are coming from.
I think it's in general, like I have talks to people like expecting the AI solution to work out of the box with their specific use case. Like, why? Why should it? So, like, it's not trained on anything you ever done. So why should it just work? And yeah, that's a general understanding. I would love to emphasize one point, because like today is about data privacy and security. Public data is one thing, but I've seen also in a lot of your posts, you like actually like warning people that there is a potential misuse of their data if they are not careful where they use ChatGPT or AI solutions in general. Would you love to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I mean, this is unfortunately buried in the privacy terms and conditions of every AI system that you interact with. So if you've ever upgraded iOS, right, this is one of the things I always say is the biggest, you think about like the biggest lie that you've ever told, right? No one ever wants to admit it. The biggest lie that everyone who owns an iPhone has ever told is when you get the iOS update, it says, this is for security reasons. Did you read the terms and conditions? I agree. Okay. Yeah. I mean, show me honestly, anybody that's actually read it. You know, so we fool ourselves, you know, in our ambition to deploy the latest and greatest and innovate. And truly, experimentation is a big part of that. But, you know, unfortunately, when you're looking at the terms and conditions of a lot of the major AI systems, all of them have, you know, frameworks in place, whether it's for, you know, insight or, you know, data collection or just outright privacy violations. I mean, we see it. So you got to be really careful. I'm not an attorney. Okay. So this is where I'll draw my line. I'm not going to tell you what AI algorithms you should use or shouldn't use. I will tell you that if you're getting involved with any system, you need to understand the algorithms that are used behind it. And then as a CEO, you should be looking at, okay, what does this mean for us in terms of privacy? That there's some level of implicit trust that you have to have, right? The minute that data is exfiltrated from your environment, it's somewhere else. Okay, so you give it to Microsoft, Microsoft's got it. They're going to go through and handle it with their terms of service. You give it to ChatGPT and OpenAI, they're going to handle it through their terms of service. So you have to be comfortable with that. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's risk, but when you have systems like ChatGPT where on the front homepage it says, we are training other people with your data, you got to know that, right?
Would that be the same consideration for people who subscribe to the enterprise plan?
So according to them, no. But you got to remember, the enterprise plan is different. It's a different use case, right? So if you wanted to use it for that, then yes. But this depends on what you're using it for. If you're just going in and you just want to use it for that, then I'm sure it's probably not bad, right? You'd have to read the terms and conditions. I'm not 100% sure. My understanding of the enterprise is that they go to great lengths to keep that data private. It's still another system, though. You're still transmitting your data off-premises, off-site. Right. So if you're looking at like GDPR and all the rest, or like any of the other major, you know, compliance requirements that require you to have data processed in your country on systems that you maintain and control, any third-party API call, that's not going to work.
So how do you tackle this at Emily? So if, let's say, you know, for organizations that really, really take it to heart and they don't want to use, you know, the regular $20 subscriptions for ChatGPT, and they're not comfortable with the enterprise plans that ChatGPT offers. So I'm curious, how do you address that with your work at Emily?
It's so simple, you wouldn't believe. You ready?
Yeah.
It never leaves Microsoft. That's it. That's the answer.
I always say, if you trust Microsoft and Microsoft's cloud, then you can also trust their AI implemented on it. So, and a lot of people trust all their business data to Microsoft 365. So,
one of, if not the most valuable company in the world.
Yeah.
Okay. This is like almost a question. It's almost a fallacy, right? Because you say, well, you know, I don't trust them because they're so big and they can do whatever they want. Okay, so you go with a smaller guy. But the smaller guy is not going to have the resources that Microsoft has to provide the level of protection that Microsoft can. So do you want a company that's got a greater likelihood of surface area of attack? Do you want to take an open LLM, like a truly open LLM, and run it locally? But then you don't really understand what's going on in that code, right? because you don't monitor and deploy and install code for a living. So you don't really know what that code is doing. But hey, it's running locally. My data is not leaving my premises. Where is it? You don't know. Right. So this is the problem, right? Unless you are the guy who's doing it, and it's the same problem you have with encryption, right? On the security side of things, you know, is it better to have an algorithm that nobody knows how it works, but, you know, once somebody figures it out once, it's completely cracked? Or is it better if everybody knows how it works and you depend on the security of the key? Most people would argue the latter. It's the security counterpart to the AI argument about data privacy, if you really want to get into it. So it really is a chain of custody of trust, right? Where do you want your data to be? Who do you trust it with? And then can you put reasonable security controls in place to prevent exfiltration and manipulation so you hit the confidentiality, integrity, and availability that's required? That's the CIA triad, right, for security of your data. And of course, that's going to involve a third party unless you're the guy writing your own LLM. But good luck with that. You know, even Sequoia Capital won't get behind you. One of the largest Silicon Valley investors in the world will not get behind new, brand new AI engine algorithm deploy. They're getting behind companies that are deploying AI. By the way, we have no investors, for the record. We're not looking for any. But, you know, they're not doing it because the battlefield is just too competitive and people are getting slaughtered left and right. You know, and at the end of the day, it's going to be about resources. People that are able, right, and people are going to be able to use AI are going to be the guys that are going to win. Yeah, and it is a resource issue. You're right.
Yeah, that's why I personally look more positive on Facebook being in the open LLM space, because at least they have the resources to provide proper compute. But yeah, it's definitely interesting. From a privacy perspective, if I want to deploy my solution, I have an internal use case I want to solve. Having it on Microsoft is one thing, but like more in general, what are the things I have to be aware of to be sure about my data? Are there some key points you would suggest? Yeah.
Since you brought up Facebook, let's just take a moment of silence to remember that Mark Zuckerberg started his company by saying, "They trust me, dumb schmucks." Okay, but he didn't say schmucks. That's the beginning of his company, okay? If you don't know that, you know that. So go back and look. Now they've got a ton of money by collecting people's data, and they are now selling an AI system. Okay, might be open, but hey, we trust them. Okay, so I'm not huge into companies that start like that. It's no surprise. I've talked about this at length. Now, the question that you're asking, Ed, in terms of the use cases, the biggest problem that I've seen with deploying AI systems, and the easiest thing to get around in terms of a successful deployment in this regard, is to succeed, you have to start with the use case and the data, not the tool, right? And I've said this a few times, but it's worth clarifying. Starting with the product first or tool first approach will fail. You can't come in and say, "I've got AI, I'm going to deploy it into the environment." Right, there's this picture I'll have to get to you guys. It's a cartoon where it's got a guy in the back of a boat with a little martini glass, and he's talking to a girl, and there's a flag flying off the back, and there's like 10 people on the front of the boat, and the girl says, "Man," I goes, "how'd you get money for this project?" And the guy goes, "I don't know, it was the same thing I was going to do, except I just called it AI," and the back of the boat says AI. You know, so I mean, everybody wants to figure out how to do it because they're enamored with the potential, but nobody really understands what they're doing unless they've thought it through. So the number one thing is the use case. What problem are you trying to solve? Because AI is not the solution to every problem. You know, it's the old hammer and nail question. You're running around with the nail and everything looks like a hammer to use, you know? Like it's not always the best solution. So I think the use cases are really key. And you mentioned those before. So to get into some of those that you asked about at the very beginning of the chat, you know, what are some of these use cases? Anything that's generative that you need creative feedback on is a great use for AI. Right. Anything where you need to summarize content is a great use for AI. Anytime that you need to extract out bullet points, rephrase, correct your grammar, right? These are good uses for AI today. Without a properly trained set, asking it for advice, bet. Asking it to do math for you, bet. Asking it for advice that involves math, probably the worst. Last week, I posted up a question, if you guys saw, about the towel drawing. It was a very simple question.
Oh, what was it?
This is a very simple question. If it takes 15 minutes to dry, or sorry, if it takes 1 hour, pardon me, to dry 15 towels in the sun, okay, so 1 hour to dry 15 towels, how long does it take to dry 20 towels? What do you guys think?
Like hour 15? No, okay, actually, no, it's an hour. It's an hour. I'm sorry. Why am I?
It's okay. Stupid. Yeah. What do you think?
No, I think like that's debatable because that's one that goes around a lot of times. Often with shirts, I dry 5 shirts. How long does it take for 20? It depends. Do we have enough space to do it in parallel? Then it's still 1 hour. Do you have it sequential? Yeah. Then it takes longer. So yeah, that's I think. It's an odd example, but yeah, in general, enumerations, stuff like that's not AI is not that big in that. It gets better, but yeah, it sometimes you give it a more complex math problem and it gives you the right steps and the right thought process, but gives you the wrong result. So yeah, that's definitely not a strong suit. So I always see like a rule of thumb, like, does it involve language understanding? Is your task with automated language understanding improve, like, automatable, basically? And could it bring you a benefit in understanding unstructured data? And, like, extract something structured from which you can work with. So that's basically how I always viewed it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think you're right. And I think that the fact is that there is a clear answer if you make some assumptions. The sun is the same, you're not putting the extra 5 towels in the shade, blah, 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 right? All that stuff, the conditions don't change. So that's where you will get back what I call the confidently incorrect answer, right? Because you get back the math formula. So Elena, you're correct. It's exactly how the AI started. It was your first thought. It started writing out the math formula, except it didn't know any better, right? So it just kept giving out this incredibly authoritative looking answer. And this is where it can kind of fall apart. So you want to talk about the not so great use of AI. If you don't know what's going on, and this is where a lot of people get confused, you ask AI a question. When I say AI, I mean most major, you know, AI LLM systems like Copilot and, you know, Perplexity and others. The answer they give you back looks so authoritative, particularly if it's not a topic that you understand. You assume it must be true. And that's kind of like what Mark Twain said, right? It's easier to fool somebody than to convince them than they've been fooled. That's actually not exactly what he said. It was part of his book. But I have it written out in my elephant in the room post from earlier. But it's the general sentiment, right? So the idea is that if you're not comfortable with the subject matter that you're asking it about and you get back the answer that looks correct, you're misleading yourself and you don't even know it. And I think that's the biggest challenge, because once you lock that information in, you go, this is the way it is. You start making other decisions based on that. You know, and it's hard. It's really, really, really hard for people in general to go back and to remember where they learned things from. You know, it's a big challenge.
I think we've kind of talked about one of the things is, you know, with AI is that it doesn't know any better because you've prompted the system to provide an answer. And whether or not it has information to back that information up, it's going to respond because you asked it and it's going to come up with an answer. And one example that we've provided before is, unlike children, so who you ask, you'd be like, hey, Tommy, what do you think the subject is? And, you know, they'll kind of look at you weird and say, I don't know, and run away. Mm-hmm. With AI systems, they don't do that. They don't respond, you know, by default to say like, oh, this is not data that I currently have. I'm just going to take something that's maybe potentially related and become very creative, and that's sound authoritative, as you've mentioned. So it's hard to decipher when the information, the output was in fact based on information that it was trained on versus completely like made up. But one of the things that I think we've kind of talked about before is RAG and citing references and citing documents. Is that a potential way to, again, build trust, but also validate or kind of understand, okay, well, should I be trusting this output? Is this something that does look reasonable as an output? So do you think that that's a good alternative, or do you think that we still have significant work to do beyond, you know, the sources, citations, and RAG paradigms?
Fantastic question. You're not going to like my answer. It's both. I'll give you an easy example, a very easy example. retrieval augmented generation, REG, right? Where mm-hmm. you're pulling data from a document and you're getting a cited source helps a lot. But here's where it falls apart. You have two versions of the same document with similar content. One's a month old, one's a month new. Okay, so now your mind starts racing. Well, I know how to solve that problem. I'll take the newer document, right? What if the newer document hasn't been validated? What if somebody uploaded it and they weren't supposed to? And it's not, the changes there aren't supposed to be reflected. You need to use the old information. Okay, well, let me go through a change control process. Okay, well, what's the change control process? Now you're getting to data. Okay, so yeah. Now the question is, is it RAG? And this is why a tool-first approach fails. Because you can't go in and say, I'm putting a tool in and it's going to solve my problem, because it won't. Right? The problem you're dealing with is a data problem. So until you can solve for that human element of data qualification, the business process optimization, right, behind the scenes, you're not going to fix anything with AI. In fact, you may complicate it. And the worst part is that humans in general, like trusting things, you know, it's like glass. Once it's broken, it's very hard to put back together again. So you start looking at an AI system and it starts giving you, you know, incredulous answers. And suddenly you say, I can no longer trust this thing for anything, right? Mm-hmm. Even if it's not the AI's fault, even if it's bad data that you're putting it into, you know? So that I think that's really the challenge. So, you know, unfortunately, I would love to tell you it's one or the other. It's both, but it's for those both. Reasons.
So what would be the best practices? So I know that, as you mentioned, so you do need to have, again, a strategy for managing data, managing yes. versions, accuracy, probably taking care of bias and things like that. So what are some best practices for doing it right? So should you have, you know, a data team that really strictly just focused before even implementing AI or even thinking about the solution, really focused on the data to figure out, what's relevant for my use case? Is this data relevant to the problem that we're trying to solve? And how do you ensure quality of the data? And then how, you know, is this a team that you maintain over time that kind of maintains and oversees the quality of the data? Is there a way to automate kind of that process with some, you know, monitoring tools and things like that? So I'm just curious, what are some best practices that you recommend to clients that you work with?
Sure. That's a really good question. I know we only have limited time, so I'll try to condense this down. the number one thing is you have to talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about. Right. I've mentioned this before, but there are a lot of people out there that claim that they're AI experts who don't know what machine learning is, who don't know what a knowledge graph is, who don't understand that the fundamentals of AI existed prior to the 1990s. Right. They see GPT and they go, oh, my God, I can connect it to Zapier and it works. And take a look at this in magic, like a chat with your PDF. And this is magic. Right. Like those are not the guys you want to talk to. Okay. You also don't need to talk to somebody that's super far in the weeds. That's like a complete LLM optimization gearhead. I love those guys to death. I have several of them on my team, but they're not the people that you want to be leading the charge when it comes to business requirements, right? So you need to find the right person or the right team to talk to who understands what AI can do and what AI cannot do, right? What AI is good at and what AI is probably not going to be that good at. And then that same person needs to understand, what problem are you trying to solve? And is AI a good fit for it at all? So several organizations are hiring like chief AI officers. They're giving part-time AI officer roles. Some folks are hiring, you know, part-time AI consultants. That's all wonderful. I would just stress that leading with the business process, leading with the strategy that you're trying to solve for over a period of time, which is not going to be a week or two. Okay. If I've been in the room with so many executives over the course of my career, you come in and say, oh, we have this really important problem you need to solve. And they start talking in weeks or months. And you're like, there's no way. There's no way that a problem that's this big with this many, you know, horrible tentacles yeah. all through your organization is going to be solved in 3 weeks. Okay. So right off the bat, as an executive consultant, you need to understand that that's a flag. That's a red flag. Mm-hmm. So these are the types of pre-qualification questions, and the right person will ask them everything I mentioned. And there's a lot more to it behind the scenes, but it starts with the right relationships. So I would say that's probably the number one thing.
Thank you very much. So, unfortunately, we already chewed through half an hour, so it was kind of fast. Michael, really, thank you very, very much. It was really, really helpful to having your insight, also having the insight from someone who, actually works with that stuff. So thank you very much.
Yeah, we you know, we don't see maybe on my side kind of the ins and outs, the details that you kind of provided, especially on the data. I think I've learned a lot, so I appreciate your time and working with us, because again, we had the false start before and we we figured it out, but really appreciate your insights. I think that our audience will definitely benefit from your advice and kind of the stories that you've told us, you've told our audience, and the advices you've shared. So truly appreciate you, and we really enjoyed having you on the show.
So it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This was Michael J. Silva, our first guest. And yeah, thank you, Michael, for that. And yeah, you can find Michael on LinkedIn and I think also on the web. Svetlana, can you help me out here?
Yeah. So emely.ai, emely.ai is Michael's company. Really enjoyed this episode. This was our first guest on the podcast. If you would like to be on to chat about a topic in AI that you're really passionate about, all ears, we'd love to invite you in for a conversation with us, but we'd love to also get your feedback and whether this is the type of format that you enjoy, what we could do to improve it as well for you. So appreciate you guys taking the time to listen and tune in for this podcast. We really enjoyed, again, changing the format a little bit, but thank you so much. In the next episode, we'll be focused on AI in development, and we'll be covering some of the latest news that are really exciting, that has been kind of shaking up the industry in different ways. So I think you'll be really excited about the next episode as well.
Yeah, and also talking about news, please let us know if you missed the news section this time, or because we left out the news to give the guests more room, because they take extra the time for us to, yeah, to give in their expertise to for you as our audience. So, yeah, please don't hesitate. Let us know if you still would love to have some news in the guest episodes, and we can take this into consideration for the next planning. And yeah.
Yeah, and if you found this valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, follow us for upcoming episodes. We release an episode a week, so we'd love to have you as part of our kind of community. So really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you very much also from my side, and see you in the next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you.